Hi, it's Brendan for the Salvos here. This is a heartbreaking crisis, and every day we're seeing people facing personal disaster. But you can help those hardest hit. Go to salvationarmy.org.au and help us leave no one in need.
Yeah, it's 16 after 7 on Monday, May 18. There's a bit of cooling down on this over the weekend, but I'll tell you what, everyone is saying what the hell is going on with China. I don't have a problem with the way Scott Morrison is handling this, but I'll tell you something. Things can't go on the way they are. The Prime Minister said at the end of last week, we will always stand our ground when it comes to the things that we believe in and the values we uphold, which prompts the question, what price are we prepared to pay to maintain our sovereign values in dealing with China? I note the editor of the Global Times, the leading Chinese Communist Party rag, has described us as pieces of chewing gum on the sole of China's shoes. Last week we had threats by China to bury Australian barley and meat exports. China wanted to slap an 80% tariff on barley exports, suspend meat exports from 4 abattoirs, that's 35% of our beef exports to China, because Scott Morrison has led the world in calling for an independent international inquiry into the origins of the coronavirus. Pretty simple stuff, I would have thought. There will be a draft EU resolution presented to the World Health Assembly tomorrow, calling for an evaluation to be conducted in consultation with member states on, quote, lessons learnt from the COVID-19 response to establish a global initiative on pandemic preparedness. We, Australia, will back that resolution. The Prime Minister said last week that Australia, like China, quote, will draw very clear lines about things that are very important to us. We respect their lines as we expect our lines to be respected, whether it's on foreign investment rules or our rules around technology, our rules regarding human rights and things of that nature. I don't think any Australian would want us to compromise on those important things, and those things are not to be traded ever, said the Prime Minister. Australians would agree with the rhetoric. But when you have the Chinese Communist Party rag, the Global Times, telling us we're pieces of chewing gum on the sole of China's shoes, and then the same newspaper talks about threats to Australia's $63 billion iron ore exports only a week after, and then a tax on beef and barley producers, which of course threatens the livelihoods of thousands of Australians in rural Australia, something's got to give. Don't expect, of course, McCormack, the National Party leader, to have anything to say about defending rural jobs. And it's not just Australia. Denmark, France and Germany have been threatened. Sweden has been warned of consequences if it awards a dissident Swedish-Chinese publisher a prestigious literary prize. The Chinese ambassador to Sweden told Swedish Public Radio in November last year, quote, we treat our friends with fine wine, but for our enemies, we have shotguns. The former head of the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, Peter Varghese, said last week that Australia and China's interests were no longer aligned, that the strategic partnership should be abandoned. We should understand that this bully boy President Xi is putting a lot of history at risk here. As the Australian newspaper rightly said at the weekend, there's a long shared history of trading and cultural exchanges between our countries. In other words, we've got to separate between the leadership of China from the people. The editorial says generations of Chinese migrants and their children have thrived here, enriching our nation. In 2014, the countries elevated relations through a comprehensive strategic partnership after an historic free trade deal, 2014. Well, Peter Varghese says the strategic partnership should be abandoned. COVID-19 destructions have exposed our companies now. They're weak to foreign takeover. We've talked often about Canberra vetting almost every potential foreign investment. Now, that has changed, but the proof of the pudding will be in the eating. We should be reversing the deal, such as the Port of Darwin lease. And all this is fascinating to one backbencher who's not found much favour with the leadership of the Liberal Party. Concetta Fierravanti-Wells is a New South Wales Liberal senator, has been since 2005. Since 2018, she's persona non grata with the leadership. She was Minister for International Development and the Pacific. She was banished for comments she made about China. She was talking then, 2018, about China's manoeuvring within the Pacific. She talked about debt trap diplomacy. In other words, pile on enough debt to sovereign nations in the Pacific that they'll always be satellites of China. Way back in 2018, she was taking a tough stance on all of this, and she was rebuked by many on her own side. She said in September 2018, the high debt to gross domestic product ratio of various Pacific Island countries is of genuine concern. She was spot on. I said so at the time, that these Pacific Island countries could become so heavily indebted that they'd be forced to forfeit assets to China in order to repay the loans. She called this out as Beijing putting pressure on the Pacific Islands to back China's communist regime and agenda. She said back then, and was condemned for saying it, we need to watch out. Now, at the same time, the ANU research found that Chinese companies and individuals had invested over $40 billion in Australia in 4 years. There were 262 different Chinese acquisitions, 262 big ones, between 2014 and 2017. You can't get up-to-date figures. 70% of them were by Chinese-controlled companies, 20% directly associated with the Chinese government. And then there were Chinese-controlled investors based in Hong Kong, the Cayman Islands, Singapore, Britain and so on, and they were investing in Australia as well. Now, you can't get the breakdowns of this stuff, but this is a move for China to exert control. The lead researcher of that ANU study, Susan Travis, at the time said, investments were predominantly made by acquisition of equity, conferring a controlling interest or a significant influence to a Chinese parent company in a going concern located in Australia. Now, here now we've got this high-handed bully boy behaviour, 80% tariff on barley, the suspension of licences of beef producers. These are willful moves to disrupt commercial contracts. And they hurt Chinese consumers too. And this can't be allowed to prevail. Simon Birmingham's the trade minister. He can't even get the ministerial equivalent in China to take his calls. China have yet to respond to our minister's request to discuss what Beijing has done to our meat and barley and our iron ore. Perhaps our wine is next. None of this surprises Concetta Fierro or Annie Wells, who made a simple comment almost 10 days ago, quote, when I made comments about the Communist Party of China in 2017 and 2018, I was hung out to dry by Turnbull, Bishop, Payne, Birmingham and others. She said the same group thinkers are still in cabinet and still in key portfolios. Concetta Fierro of Andy Wells is on the line. Concetta, good morning.
Good morning, Alan.
None of this surprises you?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't surprise me at all. But what is clear is that it cannot be business as usual with the communist regime in China after this pandemic. That is one thing that is clear. And I think when we look back in recent history, the seeds of the predicament that we face today, including those most critical years when Julie Bishop was foreign minister before she handed over to Maurice Payne, very much reflected on China's activities. The other thing is too, let's not forget that in 2000, 5% of our exports were to China, and this rose to a massive 33% by 2018. So we've got 26% of our two-way trade is with China, and 33% of our exports are with China. So the reality is that we now have to look at what is our plan to decouple from China. We cannot continue to have this dependency on the communist regime, and the pandemic has shown that. And also, Alan, I think it's really important, the costs of the pandemic are vast. Billions of taxpayer dollars have been expended because monies have had to be borrowed, and we, the taxpayers of Australia, have to repay that money. And so therefore, justifiably, the Australian public want to know, well, are we going to get any compensation for this?
You're saying, I don't believe your words, there is sufficient political fortitude to push for reparation.
Well, since April, I have really been advocating that the government should act on those things which I believe are in our direct control, namely to come up with a plan for reparations and a plan to decouple from China. Look, I have to say the push for an inquiry into the origins of the virus, a commendable. But the reality is that China will do everything in its power to avoid scrutiny. And we've seen overnight the motion that is likely to go up and possibly be passed has been considerably watered down. And just from a cursory reading, doesn't appear to even have a reference to China. And we've also seen the whole issue of culpability of the Chinese regime in relation to its dealings with the World Health Organization and the whole...
Quiet. Just telling lies. Just coming to your point there, then. I see the former defense and security official and highly respected Peter Jennings said recently, quote, China can do what they want, wherever they want, and they'll never be punished for their behavior because of the veneer of maintaining the relationship. Do you agree with that?
Well, you have to... Peter's absolutely correct. And let's not forget that only a year ago, three Chinese warships were allowed to sail into Sydney Harbour on the 30th anniversary of Tiananmen Square. So in my view, I think that we do have a long way to go. I think that by approving that visit to coincide with the anniversary of that massacre, not only was insensitive, but it actually demonstrated that Beijing really does dictate terms, and we just acquiesced. And so in that instance, Beijing won the psychological contest. And so it doesn't surprise me that we have tended to appease, we've tended to acquiesce. And this is all at the same time, Alan, as our ships attempting to abide by international law, exercising freedom of navigation exercises with our allies in the South China Sea, are faced with the communist regime's bellicose and illegal actions in the South China Sea. So we've seen what's happening in relation to our ships going off to Vietnam. So all of this is the background. So, yes, we are going to have to demonstrate a lot of political fortitude.
But then, Concetta, sorry to interrupt you there. Before you go, see, what our public don't understand, which I can't comprehend, we have these Confucius Institutes all across Australia. We've got 14 of them in 13 universities. There's one in the New South Wales Department of Education. We have 67 Confucius classrooms located in primary and secondary schools. They get funding from China. And my understanding is there are Australian universities hosting Chinese government-funded education centres who've signed agreements explicitly stating that those centres must comply with Beijing's decision-making authority over teaching at these facilities. This Hanban is the Beijing-based headquarters that funds and oversees these Confucius Institutes. How the hell has this been allowed to take root?
Well, that plus a whole range of other things. But when you've got a framework, a sympathetic framework, I have to say, which I've referred to as a fellow traveller foreign policy framework, where those pushing this framework and those people doing business with China were very happy to do so long as the rivers of gold continue to flow. Now, whilst ever our foreign policy professes to be a projection of our values, we cannot allow commercial interest to cloud our judgment.
Okay, now look, I've got to go to the news. I just want to finish this. A couple more things I want to ask you. We'll come back after the news, Concetta.
Okay.
Thank you for your time. It's 7:30. News next.
You can trust opinions that matter. You're listening to the Alan Jones Breakfast Show right across Australia.
Yes, it's 8:22. We'll go back to Concetta right now, the Liberal Senator for New South Wales. But before I do, perhaps I could have avoided the interview with Concetta and we could have saved her trouble and you a lot of time. We could have just gone to the cartoon in the Australian today. Aren't these cartoonists clever? I mentioned to you that Simon Birmingham cannot get his equivalent in Beijing to take his calls. Unbelievable, isn't it? And, of course, this business about what they have actually said, you know, at the end of the day, we're just a little bit of a piece of chewing gum on the sole of the Chinese shoes. Well, the cartoon in the Australian says, you have reached the Chinese Ministry of Trade. Your obedience is important to us. To grovel, press 1. To beg, press 2. To submit, press 3. To hear these options again. Isn't that brilliant? That sums it all up. Conchetta, just welcome back. Could I just ask a couple of things? The Prime Minister said, quote, at the end of last week, we will always stand our ground when it comes to the things that we believe in and the values we uphold. Have we? Will we?
Well, I don't believe that we have thus far. I think that we have seen repeated instances where China has demonstrated that it doesn't have the credentials of a good international citizen, and I don't believe that we've stood up to them. You know, we know that there have been cyber attacks, we know there have been human rights abuses, we know what they've been up to in the South China Sea. And I think that what we've seen is we've been happy to do business, people have been happy to do business with them, so long as the rivers of gold have flowed. Now, I think that that is now demonstrating that that's a bad business model and things have to change. And it will take a lot of fortitude for that to change because those rivers of gold are considerable.
Last week when Julie Bishop called for calm and considered diplomacy with China, you said that the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade and the Minister Julie Bishop had ignored your warnings about China.
Well, you mentioned those things at the beginning. I think that certainly when I made those comments, I felt that there was a decided sense. We don't want to offend China. My criticisms, though valid, were not welcome. I never saw a clear strategy, what the strategy was with China. If there is one, I certainly wasn't privy to it. But in any case, I knew what the issues were in the Pacific. I pushed very hard for the Pacific to be one of those five priorities. Our allies had expected us to look after our backyard, to work in the Pacific, and I think that we let them down, and I think that we didn't do what we should have done. We dropped the ball in the Pacific. But with the Pacific step up, I think that we're witnessing a rollout of much of the work that I started as minister, although I have concerns about some of the issues. But in any case, when I did resign, Alan, and you know I resigned in August from the term 2018 from the Turnbull ministry, I actually did refer to that in my resignation
letter.
My disappointment. But before we finish this interview, Alan, I did want to say thank you for giving people like myself who have honest and forthright views the opportunity to speak out. And thank you for standing up for the values, the concerns of the silent majority of Australia, because there aren't many places where we are able to express our views. And I want to thank you for the work that you've done over many, many years, but also for asking those uncomfortable questions of politicians, because that's so vitally important for the public discourse.
That's very kind of you, Conchetta. I did want to ask you perhaps one final and uncomfortable question, which I think out there people listening wouldn't fully understand. When the Prime Minister says we must stand our ground when it comes to these things and believe in the values we uphold and so on, surely if we're talking about power, naked power in the region, China cannot be more powerful than the collective of America, Japan, India, Australia, throw in Indonesia and Vietnam if you like. Isn't that what we should be working towards?
Absolutely, Alan, and that's my point, and that's why I made those comments in relation to what's happening in the South China Sea. I think it's incumbent on Australia to increase its involvement with its allies, especially the United States, in calling out the communist regime for its bellicose and illegal actions, not just in the South China Sea, but in other parts of the world. And that really is, we are a democracy.
Work together.
It is a totalitarian regime.
It is.
It is not a market economy.
Say it as it is.
It is a totalitarian regime, and as you know, we need to work that out, because they don't abide by the same values and beliefs, and they don't operate on the same level and according to the same values as we do. And we've got to stick by those values, not just in words, but in deed.
Good on you. And that's what Scott Morrison said, but now that's rhetoric. We will always stand our ground when it comes to the things that we believe in and the values we uphold. I don't think we did that over the Port of Darwin. All right, Conchetta, lovely to talk to you. Thank you for your time.
Thanks very much, Alan.
Not at all, Conchetta, fear of Randy Wells. What do you do about the Port of Darwin? There's a clause there which allows us to break that lease arrangement for 99 years, and we should exercise it. Just on this coronavirus, I see McDonald's. See, this is what's happening about getting the economy back on its feet. McDonald's are going to close 12 of their stores across Victoria. They said in a statement overnight, The driver, who worked for an external service provider, delivered to all 12 outlets and interacted with quite a small number of employees. The driver was asymptomatic and unaware they had contracted COVID-19. So the restaurants are going to now be subject to a deep clean and reopening pending the availability of replacement staff. 12 McDonald restaurants will be closed today in Melbourne. Look, it's National Crime Stoppers Day. We're being urged to trust our gut when it comes to spotting suspicious activity. A survey has revealed about 1 in 5 Australians choose to turn a blind eye to unsolved crime. Many say they're scared about possible retribution. Over the course of the last 35 years, I've urged my listeners to call Crime Stoppers almost every day, probably thousands and thousands of times. And the best way for police to track criminals and to solve crime is to involve the wider community. So by and large, I think most people are happy to play their part. It is National Crime Stoppers Day. We can all contribute to keeping the streets safe if we speak up when we see someone breaking the law. The Crime Stoppers number, 1-800-333-000, 1-800-333-000. And look, another important story just before I go to a break. The former Queensland Premier Peter Beattie will emerge from lockdown. This is very important. Lockdown tomorrow. You've seen Peter Beattie for years and years and years. Fair skin, sort of almost auburn, Titian-coloured hair. And he'll emerge from lockdown tomorrow to raise awareness for a very good cause. Mr. Beattie's face is currently covered in large red sunspots from decades of exposure to the hot Queensland sun. He's been advised by a skin specialist to undergo a 3-week course of treatment for solar keratosis. He's already undergone a skin graft for basal cell carcinoma near his eye. That was a benign skin cancer. Mr. Beattie, 67, he says, growing up in Condobolin in New South Wales and Atherton in North Queensland meant I've ended up with a skin problem. It's time to raise awareness about skin cancer and the harm attached to sun exposure. We wish him well and thank you for speaking up. We have to take skin care, skin cancer seriously. Any moles or spots that change shape or size, consult your doctor. Don't muck around. It kills skin cancer nearly 2,000 Australians a year.
Hi, it's Brendan Nottle from the Salvation Army here. This is a heartbreaking, overwhelming crisis. And today, as every day, the Salvos are doing what we can to help people experiencing their own personal disaster. In the midst of turmoil, you can help those hardest hit. Whether they're ill, have lost their job and facing poverty, or simply lonely, you can give practical help and hope. Go to salvationarmy.org.au to give to the Red Shield Appeal now, and please help us leave no one in need.